talks like an animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animal.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today will be Glenn Hatchell, returning for the 12th, mind you, installment of Ask the Trainer. If you've caught some of the past installments of Ask the Trainer, you know we do this about every 3 or 4 months, first of all, and you recall that it revolves around inviting listeners to call in with questions for Glenn about their dogs or their cats' behavior. Until his retirement not long ago, Glenn served as a behavior and enrichment manager at the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, an accomplished dog trainer and behaviorist, and formerly a WMNF programmer, as well as occasional Talking Animals guest host. In fact, he'll be guest hosting 3 weeks from today, March 26th. But on today's show, he will field several calls and emails so he can answer listener questions about their animals' behavior and or provide guidance on training. So we invite listeners to call in at 813-239-9663 with questions for Glenn. The questions can be submitted by email at dj@wmnf.org or via text 813-433-0885. Please join us. By the way, we've learned over the 12 times we've been done this before that phone calls tend to be the most effective way, just because they enable Glenn to ask follow-up questions of the caller and find out more about the particular issue and kind of better calibrate his recommended solution or suggestion. Still, for listeners unable to call or just prefer to write in, we also aim to incorporate questions submitted by email, again, dj@wmnf.org or via text 813-433-0885. So feel free to call or email now while Glenn and I talk for a few minutes, because we always talk about something off the top of the show. And in this case, I think it's going to be socialization, if I'm not mistaken. Glenn, is that right? Good morning, Glenn, first of all.
Good morning. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you. Welcome back. It's great to again have you in the studio and talking face-to-face. The first several times we did this, we weren't lucky enough to have that arrangement, so I feel lucky that we do now.
Yeah, it is fun to come in here and do this. But yes, we're going to talk about socialization today. It's a...
Well, what do we mean when we say that?
Well, exactly. And there are... You hear people talking about, I need to train my dog, and I need to socialize my dog. Now, I'm going to, as always, I'm talking dog-centric, but this really applies to a lot of animals, which we'll find out as we discuss more during the show today. But there's an aspect of training that I think of as teaching a skill. So that could be sit, stay, something very specific that you want the dog to do when you request the dog to do it.
Yeah.
So I like to call those cues. We're giving them cues, not commands, because we're not commanding them to do something. We're saying, hey, if I do this, this is what I want you to do. So let's use sit, for example, of using, okay, great, my dog knows how to sit. Well, if somebody comes walking by and gets all excited, is your dog going to sit or is your dog going to jump up on that person? So there's an aspect of skill development that goes with training that it's important for every dog to know. And that comes, you know, I mean, that comes into play with the certified, why am I drawing a blank on the AKC? The canine good citizen.
Okay.
I drew a blank.
Sorry, I wasn't quite sure where you're going with this.
I realized that, yeah. Yes. But yeah, I just couldn't think of canine good citizen there. But it's a test of skills. And now there's still a certain, it's in a clean environment, I'll say, is how that test is. All great, important things for a dog to know. But if your dog knows how to sit when you're there at home, but if you're out in public, your dog is worried, concerned, overwhelmed by everything. This is where we start getting the difference between the way to think of training and socialization. So I'm going to go ahead and start at the beginning. Sorry, I bent down there for a second. With three books, with three different definitions of socialization. So we're going to start with a book called Decoding Your Dog. One of the reasons I like this book, it was written by it's from the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists. So these are people who not only have a veterinary degree, but also a behavior degree. And it's a very interesting, detailed book for someone who is in the business. But for the average dog owner, It would be deep for me if I didn't do this on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah.
It would not be one that I would go for. But the only reason I'm going for it at the moment is because I want to begin with their definition that socialization is a learning process during which an individual dog learns to accept proximity to various other species or to individuals of her own species.
Mm.
Now, I'll accept that as a definition, but it's a very narrow definition
okay. When
I think of it as from a companion animal aspect of having a dog living in the house.
Yeah.
So another one of my favorite people is Patricia McConnell. She has written a number of books, and one of them is called The Other End of the Leash. And in here, in her bit of socialization, she talks about it within personalities. She says, researchers have found strong evidence of environmental influences, if puppies weren't exposed to humans during early periods of socialization, they grew into adults who were always nervous around new people. Cat behavior found kittens from bold parents would react shyly to newcomers if they hadn't interacted with humans when they were young. So pretty much all of the evidence shows that in all complex animals, that personality is a result of the interaction between his or her genetics and the environment.
Mm.
So it's kind of knowing yourself and then knowing how to react, behave in a larger context.
Yeah.
So when we think of socialization with the dog, well, actually, let me finish with the third here. This is okay. from Marty Becker. The name of this book is From Fearful to Fear Free. And I think they really, I think, summarize the other two up in a way that all of the interactions, well, let me back up one fold. The world unfolds as his eyes and ears open, receives more human handling by different people, learns lesson about his world by watching his mother, interacting with the environment and the people in it, and playing with his litter mates. So this is talking about puppies here. All of the interactions help to form a puppy's personality and responses to the world around him. Exposure to people, animal, and other things in the environment is called socialization.
Mm.
So, excuse me. So we've kind of set a framework here, I'll say, to begin with about what is socialization. There's an aspect of skilled training. So I was trying to think of a human analogy, and the only thing I could come up with possibly would be teaching a baby to eat, but that didn't still fit. But something to where you learn how to do it in your home, and then you go out into the public. You know, even as a kid when you're growing up, you may be comfortable doing something at home, but all of a sudden if you went to a restaurant, sometimes you didn't act like you knew what your manners were at the table, for example. So those are the kind of things that I think of from a socialization aspect of we need those skills that will allow you to be in control of the animal, but we want the dog to experience everything that's around the environment.
And to be able to kind of function well in that larger environment, when you step out into that world, just like the analogy with the kid, like learning how to eat or do something, going to a restaurant.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool. All right, well, let's just remind people who might just have tuned in. This is Ask the Trainer. The voice you're hearing other than my own is Glenn Hatchell, the trainer in question. This is Ask the Trainer, a thing we do every 3 or 4 months here on Talking Animals, where you're invited to call in or email in or text in with a question about your dog or your cat's behavior. And other animals are too. Occasionally we've had other animals, primarily dogs, sometimes cats, but wide open for any kind of behavioral or training kind of questions. You can call 813-239-9663. You can email those questions to dj@wmnf.org, or you can text them to 813-433-0885. So we do have one question right off the bat here, Glenn, that might tie in directly to what you were just addressing there in terms of socialization. So this one says, we adopted a female dog between 3 to 5 years, bully mix. She was the owner surrendered due to aggression at Hillsborough County Pet Resource Center. The first week we had her, she barely made a sound, no barking. In subsequent weeks, she has become a fierce barker, but under certain circumstances and not when she is alone. That's been verified, apparently, it says parenthetically here, via nanny cam. Fierce barking with neighbors' dogs on the other side of the privacy fence, they cannot see each other. She is not reactive when leashed, walking. Curious, but no pulling or barking. With certain people, she seems to have instant dislike. For others, complete opposite, total acceptance. We have not allowed her near children. They set off barking. She is fairly obedient, seems to have been well cared for in her previous life. What is the best way to curtail her 5-alarm barking? How can we cautiously expand her social life? Should we have her evaluated? So that's the question to kick off today's edition of Ask the Trainer.
And that is, I think, just so common to what many people experience when they adopt a dog from a shelter. You may or may not know anything about the dog in the past. So at least in this case, we know it's an owner surrender. That's the first bit due to aggression, but owner surrender, which means the dog, well, we're going to make some assumptions here that I may say it means, but it doesn't. But so we're going to assume the dog is used to living in a house.
Okay.
So that's a good thing to begin with. What we don't know right off is, well, what do you mean by aggression? We don't understand the context at all of what that aggression is. Is it towards where does it happen? What does it happen, you know, towards? does it only happen at certain times?
Right.
You know, there could be a million questions. So, but thinking though, okay, somewhere there was some aggressive behavior that the people who had the dog couldn't handle. So that kind of, we can use that as a premise going forward. So if we think about, she was, didn't make a sound, no barking. That is pretty typical of kind of the rule of three, of the 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months of an animal that's getting acclimated in a new home. That within the first week, because they don't know what to expect next, especially for a dog, that they can be a little timid because they, let's say, don't want to do the wrong thing or get scolded for something. Because, again, we don't know what their past was.
Sure.
So we don't have any idea what their reaction is.
A lot of guesswork involved.
Exactly. Yeah. But so what we now know, though, is that there's fierce barking with a dog on the other side of the fence. So we've now, but they can't see each other. So that can be something that can really bring a lot of arousal from dogs. They smell, they get all the sensory from smelling the other dog. They can hear the other dog, but there's no visual. So they don't know if they're looking, well, you have to assume they don't know if they're looking at a Great Dane or a Chihuahua on the other side of the fence.
Right.
I don't know if that's true or not, but we're going to assume
nothing. Nothing visual.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the good thing, though, in this is that she's not reactive when being walked on leash. She's curious, but no pulling or barking. That's basically exactly what you want from a dog.
Sure.
Now, so that's a really good thing that we see there. Of course, what we don't know at this point is if they got closer, what's the dog going to do? And that's part of the exploration. Have not allowed her to butt near children because they set off barking. So that's interesting, thinking of two ways with the barking. One, it could be barking because it's novel. It's something that, whoa, there's kids. What are they? You know, they're making noise. They look like fun. Because we've all seen a dog go to a child and just take to the child like a dog's never taken to a human before.
Sure.
But obviously, we don't want to, nobody wants to let their child be the test in something like this.
Right.
But they set off barking. So that is something that we want to think about. Fairly obedient, seems to be well cared for. So this is where I think we would, or this is where we would bring in training to work with socialization. So I'm just going to simply use sit or look, either of those cues, get the dog to look at whoever is holding the end of the leash. So if the dog's barking at a child, but all of a sudden now is looking at the owner who has a yummy cookie, then the dog's going to be more focused on what do I have to do to get that yummy cookie than worrying about barking at the child. Because the first thing we want to do is reduce that barking, because it would be an aspect of arousal. So we want to get a little bit more calm behavior, obviously, from the dog.
Sure.
But if the dog doesn't have any idea of how to sit in a scenario like that, there's no way the dog's going to sit if there's also a child that's getting them all excited.
Wound up,
so, right. So what we're doing here is getting the dog's attention back on whoever has the end of the leash, and more focused on that than reaction to whatever the stimuli, the triggers may be in the environment that would cause the barking.
Right.
So I'm actually working with a very similar situation to this right now.
Oh, yeah, with one of your own clients, you mean?
Yes, okay. Yes. It was a dog that was adopted from the shelter and was kept in the shelter for, well, that doesn't matter to the point of this story, but came in, no idea of the history of the dog other than was tossed out of a truck, and that's how it ended up back at the shelter, or ended up at the shelter. In the house, very calm, everything was great, but there were a couple of situations to where the dog reacted, and I will say aggressively, towards a neighbor. But we were able to break it down into a context that the neighbor would come in through the back versus coming in through the front. He was very large, very boisterous, and would just come blasting in with no regard to the fact that there's a new animal in the house.
Sure, yeah.
And in that case, we were really able to put it in the context of Ryder does not like Bobby, plain and simple.
Yeah.
Because we've had other people, the pool guy, no issue with the pool guy.
Mm.
So that's part of... At the beginning of, I think it was this email, that context, the context could be, in the case of this dog coming with aggression, it could be with other dogs. It may be that they, let's take it on a very dog side. Let's say that they live in an area to where everyone had a privacy fence. And there were a lot of deed restrictions. And the dog that they had, because as we've seen from the email, fierce barking with a neighbor's dog on the other side of the privacy fence.
Yeah.
So maybe the only aggression that was going on was this loud barking on the other side of the privacy fence. But where the people lived before, it was a problem. So they ended up surrendering as due to aggression, when really there may not be aggression there. So
yeah.
That's where should we have her evaluated? And we've spent a lot of time on this one, but there is so much behind this, like I had said.
Yeah.
Oh, before, so what you didn't see, because I was able to look at things while you were getting ready for the show.
Okay.
There actually was a follow-up information with this. One of the reasons the people decided to adopt this dog is the people who surrendered it said that the dog lived with cats and ferrets.
Hmm.
So to me, that even narrows down the context even more.
Sure.
Because we don't have, I mean, out on a walk, there's curiosity, but there's not reaction. There's
right.
No pulling. There's no barking. So that's part of as you have a dog evaluated, you start working through things, and this is what I'm working through with Ryder right now, of just continuing to probe and trying to get down to, okay, what happens and when does it happen?
Yeah.
And what's happened before.
And what triggers it, or who triggers it?
Yep.
Because if you got along with cats and then ferrets, that's a kind of important piece of information, it seems like, to sort of piece this together.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that immediately rules out any sort of, I'll call it small animal prey drive, aggression towards small animals.
Sure.
So then it's kind of like, well, if there's no reaction or aggression towards those, it doesn't make sense. Well, but I'm going to have it towards you, and that's why it's probably specific, but then... We've all met people who, for some reason or another, everybody seems to like, but there's something about them we just don't like. And the same thing is with dogs.
Yeah.
So there can be some dogs that it's like, yeah, there's just something about that dog I don't like.
Yeah. Don't like the cut of his jib.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So nice reference there. So There's always going to be things we don't know because they can't tell us.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
we can keep.
So would you, under this circumstance, especially since you're working with, sounds like a client or a dog that's got sort of parallel set of experiences, would you, in answer to the question what this emailer has posed, would you suggest an evaluation or what's next?
Perfect.
Guess, simplest.
Thank you. Talk to the vet if you haven't already.
Okay.
And, I'm going to presume that it's a vet who also looks at things from behavior aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily a veterinary behaviorist, because I don't think there's any in the Tampa area. But in something like this, because we don't know the aggression, and with my thought of she barks at kids on the leash, I would at least get a veterinary input, a medical input on their recommendations,
right.
thoughts on medication.
Just to
it
make
may
sure.
not be, but at
right.
least, yeah. I mean, go medical route first with.
Okay.
And just make sure that things are good there. Or if it needs to be, you know, do it. Now, obviously, if you know someone who has small kids, the approach would be, and this is what's called desensitizing. But, and others, I think, have called it exposure therapy, to where, let's say that you've got a child that's on the sidewalk and the dog approaches to the point close enough to where she sees the child, but not so close that she barks.
Hmm.
Because this is where we can start changing the dog's reaction to seeing a child.
Yeah.
That goes from... Let's assume right now it's negative, but we want to start changing that, or at least reducing, in my mind, immediately reducing the arousal reaction towards the child.
Yeah.
Even if the dog's excited to see the child, barking is not the way to let them know you want to greet them. You know,
mm-hmm.
I call those lousy greeting behaviors.
Yeah, there could be better.
Actually,
yeah.
I use different words when I'm not on the radio, but...
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure I can imagine. Yeah. All right, so do we think that's what we want to, kind of where we want to leave it for this question, for this emailer?
I hope so.
Okay,
I hope that
cool.
gave a little bit.
Yeah, I think that was helpful. So again, this is Talking Animals. We're doing another edition of Ask the Trainer. And again, the trainer in this case is Glenn Hatchell. That's who was just speaking. He's a experienced dog trainer, behaviorist, et cetera. So you're welcome to call in with your own questions. It looks like we have a caller that we're going to put on with Glenn in just a moment. But you can call 813-239-9663. You can email your question if you have one about your dog or cats or other animals' behavior or training or related issues. You can email dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. So let's take one of our callers here for a question.
Hey.
Hi, you're on Ask the Trainer at Talking Animals with Glenn Hatchell.
Hey, good morning. This is Howard. I'm in Clearwater. How you doing?
Good. How about you?
Good. Enjoying your show so far.
Oh, thanks. And I guess that really the credit's due Glenn. I don't know why I said thanks. I haven't done anything so far.
Yeah. Most of the veterinary behaviors I know of is in Luke. They're few and far between, but you're absolutely correct. It's not many around here. Socialization, I think your first response is, well, what does it mean? To me, and it's a word that wasn't mentioned by your guest or many other people, it's just education. Just like humans, you know, if you don't get outside your own county your whole life, you don't know too much. Same thing with dogs. If they don't get inside the house or outside the backyard, they just don't know too much about what they're supposed to do when they get in public. So, you know, the socialization behaviors become very important to get them exposed to everything that they can get in their environment, their whole planet's environment. They need to know it.
Spot on.
I would disagree on medications for that dog or most dogs, and 99% of dogs. Human meds don't work well on dogs. And I've seen it. We can argue this all day, but my own personal opinion, I work with dogs a lot. I always take the dog off the meds before I start working with it, because they do not have the same impact on dogs as they do with humans. And it's just a bad twist. So I would recommend not giving that advice right up front. The last thing I want to mention with any dogs from shelters, I always recommend people foster dogs first. Don't go right into adoption. Especially if you're a first-time dog owner, you're just looking for a good family pet, go foster a dog for a few weeks. And if it works out, good. If it doesn't work out, you can change your mind and get something else. So many people spend $500-$600 on adoptions and 3 weeks later, they're going to take the dog back. It can be very stressful for new dog owners. Great show, guys. It's raining, I'm driving, but I'll keep listening.
Okay, do you have a question or a comment of any kind besides the things you offered?
Okay. Give that feedback.
All right, well, thank you very much for your call.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. All right, well, I appreciate that input. That was a nice kind of summary and response to some of the things we've been talking about so far on the show. And
so thinking about that and thinking about the the previous email that we were working through, I'm going to go ahead and take one more step with that email and thinking about the child, for example, of if we had that scenario to where we could expose, or let's just say that we're going to take that dog now to a park that's near the house. Going to be able to walk on there, the leash. The dog's been fine with the leash. There's going to be kids out there playing. So we're going to be able to create as much distance as we need to keep the dog from barking at the kids. One of the things that I would do in a scenario like that is the skills that we've taught the dog in the house, like sit, perhaps down, stay, whatever it may be, spin, you know, whatever, have them do those outside in those environments as well. But again, much like learning how to swim, you've got to start in the shallow end and learn how to first, your head's going to go underwater. It's going to be scary, but guess what? You're not going to drown. And so much of this is so similar to what I think of as someone who probably is learning how to swim, of all of the aspects of I learned how to stick my head underwater, but you didn't learn how to swim. But, you know, so that's like you learned how to sit, but that doesn't mean you're ready to go to Gasparilla Arts Festival this weekend. And I will say I saw some well behaved dogs this weekend.
At the festival?
Yes.
Oh, great.
So, and that's usually one of the things
that, right?
That's usually one of the things that drives me crazy when I go to something like that.
Yeah.
Is that I look at all of them and want to start. I want to say correct them. I guess maybe it's be judgmental. but it was. It was really, really encouraging to see.
Oh, that's really great. Okay, so again, this is Ask the Trainer with Glenn Hatchell on Talking Animals on WMNF. We're going to take a call at this moment here. But if you'd like to get in on this, typically what happens over all the times we've done this is we urge people, we invite people to call in and email in and text in, and that kind of slowly but surely happens. And then we get a flood right at the end, and unfortunately we often run out of time. So I encourage you, if you're thinking about calling in or emailing in or texting in with a question about your dog or your cat, their behavior, their training, some other element, I wouldn't wait, just because we'd love to get to everybody who's interested and could use Glenn's input and help today. So 813-239-9663. Email dj at wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. And let's have another caller join the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Glenn Hatchell on Ask the Trainer.
Hi. I have two dogs. One's a 16-year-old Shih Tzu, and the other that I've had since he was 6 months. And the other is a teacup poodle that's about 6 years old. She's a rescue, and I've had her since July. Every morning, there are about four of us, at least four dogs, and two prams that walk at Crest Lake Park in Clearwater. And my question is, the poodle had never been housebroken or on a leash or anything before I got her, but she learns fast. But when we cross, there are two bridges that we cross over the water, and because it's early in the morning, a lot of ducks will roost up on the side, and once one of the dogs starts barking, they all start.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if there's some way, and because the poodle is so small, she only weighs 7 pounds, when we go around and we end up seeing more ducks, they're Muscovies, so they're quite large, and she wants to lunge at them as though she's, you know, Mighty Mouse.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering what I can do to start correcting their behavior so that one dog doesn't set off the whole crew.
That is what I have found over the years, one of the biggest challenges, because in my experience, the two things that get dogs most excited are people and another dog. And once one dog starts barking, it really will trigger. So what you want to look for here, which could be a challenge, is there's usually one dog who barks first.
Yes, that's the one that's in the pram. She only has three legs. She's missing a front one. So she only gets out of the pram to exercise. I have a second pram for the Shih Tzu because he can't make it around the park three times.
Okay.
So he's in and out. But generally, it's the dog in front. It's the one in the pram.
Okay. Is there a way to block the visual as you're going across the bridge?
No. It's like a bridge.
So here's my thought. And like I said, this is a challenge because one, the four dogs are excited and will trigger off each other because, you know, they're good friends and do this regularly. They also know where the ducks are. And they're all now conditioned to, this is what we do when we see ducks. So there's a lot of challenges that you have going on within this. But going specifically on the one in the pram, if there's a way at that moment when you're getting ready to go across the bridge that you can provide him or her?
Her.
If you can provide her something that she can focus on as you're going across, I don't know if... I'm just going to go ahead and say a really tasty cookie, but something though that's not going to be something that she can immediately chew up. But let's say like frozen peanut butter and a Kong or obviously a very tiny Kong, that she is like, I know there's ducks out there, but oh my gosh, there's peanut butter
right here. I'm
preoccupied
with this at the moment.
Exactly. Yeah. So at least she gets across the bridge. So. If we think of it in the way a book's going to say, what we're going for is instead of her getting to the bridge thinking, oh boy, ducks, she gets to the bridge and thinks, oh boy, I get a Kong with peanut butter.
I see.
Now,
it's worth a try.
It is much easier said than done. I can tell you from experience because my two dogs at home, what you described is exactly what continues to happen. It's a constant bit for me to what I have ended up doing with my guys is I don't want to discourage their barking by any means, but I also want to let them know when that's enough. So over time, when they start barking, I will just immediately say, that's enough. Good job. And they've gotten to where now. Granted, I mean we're talking months. But there were at different times treats involved here, not always, but I wanted them to bark, so I just went ahead and gave them a verbal reward, verbal praise of good job. That's what you wanted you to do, and you don't need to do it anymore. Now I will tell you, if it's a duck, they're not going to stop quickly. Ducks are big triggers for my dogs. So
well, they are for the poodle. The Shih Tzu by himself always has ignored them. He's ignored those. He ignores squirrels. It's like they can cross in front of his path.
Could care less.
And he could care less. But when the poodle is there, she's like, let me at him.
Yep. Okay. And there's part of the dynamics of, you know, when you add another one into the mix, all of the behaviors, personalities change a little bit.
Yes. And they all learn each other's bad habits as well as their good habits, unfortunately.
It's much easier for them to pick up the bad habits, that's for sure.
Yes.
Or what we think are bad habits. They think they're doing great.
Yes.
It all depends on the perspective.
Yeah. Well, thank you very
much. All right.
Much.
Thank you so much for your call, and take care and good luck.
Thanks. Take care.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Again, this is Talking Animals. We're doing Ask the Trainer with Glenn Hatchell. You're welcome to call in with your question about your dog or cat or even other animals' behavior at 813-239-9663. You can email DJ at WMNF.org or text 813-433-0885. Next week on Talking Animals, my guest will be Michael Schneider, a commercial pilot who combined his passion for aviation with his dedication to animal welfare to start Pilots to the Rescue, a nonprofit that transports at-risk animals from under-resourced shelters, takes them to rescues where they can be cared for, fostered, and ideally adopted. And Pilots to the Rescue is currently celebrating its 10th anniversary. So look forward to that conversation with Michael next week. In 3 weeks from today, the host will be Glenn Hatchell. I'll be gone that day, and Glenn will be hosting the show. And you wanted to give us a brief synopsis of what you at least anticipate the conversation will be?
Well, if you had tuned in, or if you happened to have heard, whenever it was I sat in for you over the last few months, I had Karen Plesia and Mariah Shesky on with me, and the three of us are going to be on again, and we're still deciding what we want to talk about.
It may hook into socialization, at least loosely.
Exactly. Like, right? I think we'll probably continue conversations right along this line at that time.
That's great.
So something that popped in my mind, because meds, there are different school of thoughts on medication. And our caller previously was talking about his approach with it. When the ASPCA started the Behavior Rehabilitation Center just north of Asheville, North Carolina, one of the things that they did immediately when a dog came in was put them on medication. The dogs also went through a selection process coming into here. So these were dogs that had extreme fears.
Okay.
They had extreme fears. That's why they ended up at the Behavior Rehabilitation Center as opposed to one of the other temporary centers that the ASPCA would have.
Okay.
But before, so as they go through the program there, and this may have changed a little bit, but as they're going through the program, the dogs are titrated off of the medication before they're adopted. But because of the behavior modification, there is an approach that they use that is, I don't want to say medication forward, but it's absolutely a balance in it. Now, one of the differences in that environment is it's a rehabilitation shelter center. I mean, it is designed specifically for that. It's not our home. So I say that thinking about, we've talked about certain things here, but every dog is an individual. So what fits for one might very well fit for another one, but that doesn't mean
it's not all interchangeable parts.
Exactly.
Yeah, gotcha. All right, with that in mind, let's take a call and get someone else part of Ask the Trainer. Hi, you're on Ask the Trainer with Glenn Hatchell on Talking Animals on WMNF.
Hi, yes. I have a question about my two dogs.
Okay.
So I have a big boy, a 95-pound pity pointer mix. He's super laid back. And then a 50-pound French Terrier mix. We're not exactly sure she's a rescue. But I've had her for about 3 years. She's about 3 years old. Well, I've had her about 2 years. She's about 3 years old, and he's about 6 years old. And they get along, they've always gotten along really well until one day when my partner brought in a skull for our kid. He's into skulls, and the skull happened to have some meat still on it. Anyway, he set it down not thinking, and then they had like this all-out brawl, and we separated them, and everything seemed fine after that. You know, we removed the skull. It was a bad idea. That should never happen. They were like, the smaller one is like the instigator now. And I worked from home and usually everything is fine. But then ever since that incident, it has just been like on eggshells because she gets like this look in her eye. The smaller one gets like this look in her eye and like you can feel the energy change in the room. And it's like she wants to start something. So I stopped working from home and now I give them some melatonin before I leave for work. I run them real hard in the morning.
and then give them some melatonin before I go to work, and then I run them hard again, you know, when I get home from work, and then we play again before they go to bed. But trying to figure out what I can do to, he was obviously abused, and she's got a lot of issues as far as, like, fears, like, nobody can walk in with a hat on, she freaks out. Like, we've noticed some things about her in the past couple of years, but as far as her behavior with the big dog, like, she's instigating a fight with him, and it makes me super nervous, too, and I know they're feeding off that, so, and I've watched a gazillion videos, I'm just trying to figure out what I can do to, like, ease her mind so that she can stop, like, being the aggressor.
Thank you for calling, and I apologize for, I shouldn't say I apologize because I'm not responsible for it. I'm sorry that you're dealing with something like this because it is not easy. And there's a multitude of things in here, almost to the point of where I don't know if I even want to try to approach some of the things to do, but I'm going to recommend a website. Mainly or specifically because this is the person who basically runs the aggressive dog conference that's held every year. And he's been a guest on Duncan's show before on Talking Animals. It's Michael Shikashio, and his website is aggressivedog.com. And Michael's, well, when I first became across my, became aware of Michael, and that's really his specialty, is dealing with intra-home dog-dog aggression. So there's a lot of layers to what you've said there, because since that moment, as you said, you know, there certain things have changed, which obviously are the dynamics. So there's going to be a process of isolation between them, kind of, you know, trying to bring them back together. But, you know, this also ends up into an area that I'm going to kind of say, maybe send an email and I'll get Karen and Mariah to talk about it in 3 weeks, because they both work with Michael at the Aggression and Dog Conference. So,
okay. Right. So hopefully that's helpful.
Boo, I was hoping not. They get along. For the most part, I mean, they do get along. Mm-hmm. And as long as she has her melatonin, everything's good at home. They're good. But it's just those incidences where I have to make sure before a fight happens, because he's really big. He doesn't want to fight, but he could really hurt her.
Yeah. Well, she keeps bringing up the freaking skull. That's the problem here. Yeah.
That is the main issue, and yeah. It's a very bad, bad, bad day.
All right, well, check out that website. Presumably it's going to be very helpful, and sounds like you can help navigate further around besides the fact that you had to change your work routine and give them melatonin before you leave them. I mean, you're obviously doing everything you can, but the website may have additional guidance on what you can do to further sort this out and resolve this. So thanks for your call.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. Bye.
All right, let's get to a cat question in our remaining moments. We're at the tail end of Ask the Trainer again with Glenn Hatchell on Talking Animals on WMNF. If you, we're nearing the end of our time, but we can certainly try to squeeze in some more questions/answers at 813-239-9663. Email dj at WMNF.org or text 813-433-0885. So this emailer says, when we moved, we brought inside a young feral cat we were feeding outside, maybe a year old. Our existing 5-year-old rescued cat was not happy. We did the process of keeping the cat in separate room for some weeks. When we let her out, she approached the older cat seemingly in a friendly way. The older cat screamed and swiped at her, and it went downhill from there. Initially, they could not be in the same room without screaming at each other. I started giving them temptation treats at the same time and gradually placing the treats closer and closer. We're at the point where they get the treats within a foot of each other, and when distracted by the treats, do not yell. They can be in the same room now without screaming if there is some distance between them. But they will start wailing at each other if they get too close without the distraction of treats. Is there anything else I can do?
It sounds like there's some good progress being made, because they can be in the same room. It's just that they end up getting close without the treats. So my thought would be, who's moving closer to the other one? Because I'm just somehow they're getting together when there's not getting close to each other when there's not a treat involved. So I don't know if they're doing that naturally to the point to where, you know, one of them keeps coming closer to where the screaming starts, because that would kind of indicate, okay, we've got one who's the instigator here.
Right. Well, in the initial part of the story, it was the newer cat that seemed to get closer to the longer standing cat. But I don't know if that still holds now with the treat element.
Thank you. I did forget about let that piece of it slip. One thing about socialization and getting things settled, so to speak, is it's never on our time frame. And don't quit too soon. Things have been working till this point. It's just now it sounds like there's a point where, okay, we're getting stuck right here.
Yeah.
It may just be the cats having some communication to decide whether or not they can do it. So one of the differences between that I've learned between cats and dogs in a situation like this is dogs have the instinct, I'll say, to defuse a tense situation. Cats don't. Cats are either going to avoid it or engage. So there may be some natural cat stuff that's happening here. Natural as far as, that natural communication of them trying to work through it. I would not try to eliminate temptations in that case anytime soon. Because what we want to do is we want to keep having successful behavior.
Right.
So if the whining, screaming starts happening at each other, then we've lost the opportunity there. You know,
yeah.
The problem behaviors
hard
occur.
To go backwards.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. So
that's kind of where my
thoughts. Stick with
thoughts
the temptation
be,
but, treats and just keep going.
But if the, let's say it's the one cat that is doing more of the closing in, do something to try to encourage that one to not do that. Notice how I said that positively versus discourage.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to necessarily discourage it because we, you know, that if the cats want to get together, we want to let the cats get together. But if they're both not going to give consent, then we don't want to let one of them bully the other.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, hopefully that's helpful. That was an email, so we don't have the caller, obviously, to respond, but hopefully that'd be helpful. So we're going to only have maybe a couple minutes or so for this. Maybe the last email. If we get lucky, maybe we'll squeeze one more in, but we'll try to get this one for sure. This one says, we operate a sanctuary for at-risk horses in operation for over 30 years. When you open your heart and your home to animals in need, it becomes a field of dreams, quote-unquote, kind of thing. Build it and they will come. Consequently, not only have we taken in horses, we've also taken in dozens of other animals, including but not limited to nearly 30 dogs over the years. All that to say, I am not inexperienced. We recently took in a terrier-type puppy from a local animal control. Horrible situation. Henry has been with us for 8 months now. He's now 16 months old. We have four other dogs, mixes of ages and breeds, all very well behaved, all get along perfectly. Henry, however, is exhausting to all of us. That's all caps right there. Nonstop climbing on the other dogs, biting their ears, their mouths, their tails, while they look at me begging for help. None of the other dogs reprimand him or snap at him. They just tolerate this little obnoxious tornado while literally whining for me to get him off them. Any and all reprimand from us is met with Henry looking at us like, ah, that's hilarious. And then he goes right back to terrier mode. He's lucky he's cute. Thanks for any advice.
I would get a trainer. I would probably look at ccpdt.org for some sources there.
Can you say that again slowly?
Sorry. ccpdt.org.
Okay.
Certification Council for Professional Dog Trainers.
And that probably has them by geography, amongst other things. So
correct.
If she's different part of the country, she could look for a trainer.
Oh, I just, yes, exactly. I was just assuming was here local, but you're right. I forgot. We're on WMNF.org around the world.
Okay, so get a trainer and...
Yeah, and so that was a quick answer, but this is, if we think about something that I think I'd mentioned earlier about learning how to sit. You know, you can learn it at home, but then you have to, you know, when you go to a restaurant, you're sitting there. There's a little bit different social aspect things that you're going to do in a restaurant that you wouldn't do at home. And this is kind of an opposite in a way that we've got a dog here who's really, really excited, but is so excited that we can't get those behaviors such as sit to happen. And some dogs, every dog's an individual. Some are at extreme levels. So there are different ways. There's different, and this, I think, also plays into, there's a training aspect and there's a socialization aspect here. We want to get the skills that the young one needs, but also continuing to have that interaction with the environment, because with that much energy, I guess there's two ways to look at it. The environment could be generating that energy, but take advantage of it and use that energy to wear him out. One of the thoughts that I have, it could be that he's getting a lot of physical, but not mental. So I might think more of feed him in cardboard boxes, things where he's really some got a job to do.
Okay. So, unfortunately, we're at the end of our time here with Glenn. But that's been Glenn Hatchell again for another edition of Ask the Trainer. And again, he will be actually hosting the show in my absence 3 weeks from today, March 26th. That's again Glenn Hatchell. Also, next Wednesday, we'll have Michael Schneider, founder of Pilots to the Rescue, which again flies animals from under-resourced shelters into other rescues where they can stand a better chance of being cared for and adopted. And coming up momentarily is The Conversation, the great show hosted by Mario Nunez and Joe King Carter. Stay tuned for music after that. It's WMNF Tampa.